This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Good afternoon. Friday evening, May 19th, 5:05, as you head into the weekend. I hope you enjoy it a great deal. This is Dr. Everett Piper sitting in for Tony Perkins as guest host this afternoon. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University in Bartlesville, Oklahoma. Honored to join you again today. We've got a great show coming up, and I'm going to go right into it. First up to, in this first segment at the top of the hour, you have to be hiding somewhere in a cave if you haven't heard the story about President Trump's firing of FBI Director James Comey earlier this month. It's been all over the place. Deputy Attorney General Rob Rosenstein returned to Capitol Hill today to fill in Congress and others on his decision to name the former FBI Director Robert Mueller to the special counsel on the Russian investigation. And with us now is John Hayward, a reporter with Breitbart, who's been covering this frenzy as it's been playing itself out in Washington, D.C. John, welcome to Washington Watch this afternoon.
Thank you very much for having me on again.
I almost said welcome to Breitbart. That would have been a... Got tongue-tied there a second. John, welcome to Washington Watch. Glad to have you. Okay, I'm going to cue up a clip here that follows on this intro. GOP House Speaker Paul Ryan says that the appointment of a special counsel is, quote-unquote, perfectly appropriate in the growing Russian investigation. Cue up the audio, please.
The professionals at the Justice Department need to do their jobs independently, objectively, and thoroughly. And I believe the special counsel, which is Robert Mueller now, helps them do that. It is premature to prejudge anything at this point, only that we have a process in place here in Congress, and the administration now has a process in place in the Justice Department.
All right. John, you wrote an article published on Breitbart.com that Robert Mueller, the special counsel on the Russia investigation, should investigate leaks, and that would do the trick. Now, what do you mean by focusing on leaks as opposed to the possibility of collusion or these other claims that are being fielded by the progressives and the left that have this antipathy towards Donald Trump? What are you getting at when you say focus on the leaks?
Well, special counsels have a rather broad mandate. That's the idea. They're supposed to be able to do whatever it takes to investigate the story. And I think there's a big story here, not only in terms of whatever President Trump may or may not have done and what his campaign did, but also this leak of information, this steady leak of damaging information from the White House. Some of these leaks rather clearly jeopardize national security. Some of the leaks pertaining to the conversation between President Trump and the Russian foreign minister, for example, did damage the national security. What President Trump said didn't, but the leakers did. The story did. After the story came out, all of a sudden the whole world knew what was supposedly said in the Oval Office, and if anybody's intelligence means and sources were jeopardized, that's when it happened. And not many people could have done that. Not many people were in that room. So it's really important for the special counsel to get a grip on this constant, incessant leaking that's pouring out of this White House. It is the president's problem and his administration's problem, but it is also a legal matter. Laws may have been broken with the divulging of some of this information. It doesn't all become okay because a lot of people really want to get President Trump and they think they can bring him down. That doesn't give people carte blanche to break the law, and the counsel has to investigate that.
Would you agree that there's more evidence of leaks than there is of any criminal behavior or criminal act on the part of the president?
Oh, unquestionably, because at the moment there's absolutely zero evidence of criminal behavior on behalf
Spot
of the
on.
President. You know, and maybe who knows, the council is going to do his work. And I think that's where people that think the council is a good idea, who are sympathetic to President Trump, are saying good, because now we can stop all the leaks and we can focus on the story, and then it won't be as much of a media shootout. I kind of don't think that applies today, but who knows, maybe starting Monday there'll be less of a wild stories and leaks coming out of there, because we just had a couple more of them today. But there is clearly evidence that some of these people doing these leaks have violated the law. So, I mean, there is a crime here. We know that for a fact with them. And as of yet, every single person in a position to know who has ever spoken on this investigation of Russian collusion had said there is no evidence of a crime being committed.
I'll ask you one more time. Has there been evidence of a crime committed? You need to say this one more time for everybody to hear it.
No, there is absolutely no evidence of a crime having been committed as of yet. There's nothing, zero.
Zero. There's no evidence of a crime. They keep talking about collusion. Is there any evidence of collusion? The answer is no. Is there a ton of evidence with regard to these leaks coming out of various different sectors of government? The answer is yes. You have any idea where the leaks are coming from?
You know, you'd think with a couple of the latest ones, the suspect list is pretty short. When you get to President Trump's Oval Office meeting with the Russian foreign minister, there weren't more than a handful of people who were in a position to know what was said in that room. So you'd think that would be a pretty easy investigation. And some of these others, no, it's hard to tell who it was. Some of this stuff comes out and there's 100 people it could have been, but not in these latest ones. These are all a pretty narrow suspect list.
Now, a lot of what I've read is that the suspicion is that the leaks are coming out of these career politicians that served in the Obama administration, and we can't get rid of them yet because of civil service laws that require you to take over 300 days to fire somebody. Well, that would imply that you've got these loyalists left over from Obama that are trying to take down anybody that they disagree with. However, if it's true that what you just said, that this small handful of people in the White House might be guilty, or at least one of them might be guilty of the leaks, that would imply it's somebody that the president has appointed. Or am I wrong?
No, very possible that it's a mixture of the two. It could be some of these loyalists. You hear the Obama holdovers, deep state, all these different terms people have for them. But basically, they're talking about people that have been there for a while, that predate the current administration, and that may have some animosity towards it. And then there are people within the current administration who might be looking for a position, who might be jockeying to get one another, settling internal squabbles. Maybe some of them don't like President Trump. And then occasionally, one hears the suggestion that some of these leaks are coming from people who are basically sympathetic to President Trump, and they think they're either helping him or they're going to nudge him in a certain direction by leaking. They disagree with something he did, like talking to the Russian foreign minister, so they're going to drop this little leak bomb out here to send a signal to him, and they think that's the only way to get his attention. So I think there's a mixture of all those things. I think all of those things are probably valid explanations for the leaks.
Do you buy that last argument that somebody might be doing it to actually help the president?
If it's true, then that person has spectacularly poor judgment. I'm not sure if I believe, I don't know if I want to believe anybody who could get a top position at the White House would be so foolish as to think they could do this, and it wouldn't damage the administration, damage the president, and ultimately damage anything that they do want him to do, especially now. I mean, if there was a time a couple of months ago when somebody thought a tactical leak could have served the White House's advantage or helped to nudge President Trump along, that's one thing. But after what we've seen over the last couple of weeks, good heavens, you know, you don't need a whole lot of common sense to know that that's not going to help.
Some have suggested that this might be a good opportunity for the White House to take a breath and pay attention to its work, pay attention to its policy issues and governing, and let Mueller do his work and just move on. Do you think that's possible in light of all the distraction and all of the hyperbole and all of the exaggerations that are taking place from the mainstream media on down?
I think it's possible, but I think for all the reasons you just mentioned, it's going to be difficult. They're not going to want to let him regain his equilibrium or put any points on the board. I think that's the most important strategic problem that the Trump administration has right now. They haven't posted a lot of big wins. And partly that's because it's only 4 months old. They haven't had a lot of time. But they haven't really done a lot that would lead a large number of non-ideological people to say, yes, we want to protect the Trump administration so that they can do X, Y, and Z. They need to put some things on the board other than Supreme Court Justice Neil Gorsuch. That's the one thing they come back to over and over again as a concrete achievement, and big a deal that might be. But they need some more policy wins, some more legislative wins. They need to tout the things they've done. They have had some significant accomplishments that they really haven't played up effectively from the White House. But that's going to be very important to making people interested in sticking by the administration and taking the hits and talking to their friends and family. You know how these things spread, how people talk. And you want people to say, I affirmatively support my administration because they're going to do this or they have done that, and I approve of it. And right now, they just don't have a lot of policy on the board to defend themselves with.
Lest I be perceived as being too soft on President Trump in this question dialogue with you, has he brought any of this on himself by stubbing his toe or making mistakes or failing to craft the message and control the message? Are there things that he has done wrong and could do different to get out of this mess?
Oh, unquestionably. I mean, part of it is the legislative agenda, how you prioritize things. In retrospect, looking back at the Obamacare repeal effort, I think we all knew that was a mistake or badly handled at the time. But now you look back at it and say, there's a month we'll never get back. There's a month when he could have done something and or could have done that and made it work, and it didn't. you know, so that was a missed opportunity. But also his tendency to use Twitter as a message, a social media platform to reach out to people. He has issued some tweets that have definitely come back to haunt him. He said things that maybe weren't phrased terribly well or at inappropriate moments. It's made his White House look disorganized. He undercuts his own spokespeople. He even said he did at one point. He said, "I'm a busy president and no one can speak for me." And it really doesn't work that way. You have to have a more organized, polished machine. And if he is going to get a breather over the next couple of weeks because of the independent counsel and because he's out of the country right now, that would be something to work on, a more polished, coordinated message machine. Inspire confidence. That's what you have to do in a leadership position. And what he's doing right now is not inspiring a great deal of confidence at a moment when his administration is under assault.
And you would lay at least some of the blame for that at on him, as well as the close team of advisors that he's put around himself at this point.
Sure. It's the way that he occasionally talks. It's the way he sometimes makes the decisions he makes. Some people really like that he's frank, that he's not a politician, he doesn't talk like one. And I understand that. People are tired of slick, polished liars and all of that. But really, there are times when you do have to watch what you say, and timing is critical, and coordinating with the rest of your team is very important. It's also up to him to pick the right people to be around himself, and if he has people fighting some internal war in the White House for control, he really needs to put a stop to that. I mean, it's clearly well past the point where that needs to end.
Well, and again, I agree with you, as I'm sure a lot of people listening do, that the persistent claim that there's collusion and that some criminal act has been committed is silly. It's vacuous. There's no substance to it. There is absolutely no evidence whatsoever to that. You mentioned the Middle East trip and that he's on his way. Maybe he's already left. I've lost track of the time on that. So I noticed today that the Washington Post just published a story claiming that a senior White House official is reportedly being identified as a quote-unquote significant person of interest in the Russian investigation. Do you think it's a coincidence that that was reported today just as the president is getting ready for a major Middle East trip?
Yeah, in fact, I think that was published right as the president's plane was clearing the tarmac. He probably was 50 feet off the ground when that got published, so I'm sure that was just a coincidence. No, that's obviously part of the coordinated hit that's in progress here. That is such vague language. Person of interest can mean a lot of different things. It doesn't mean there's a suspect. It doesn't mean anyone is targeted for wrongdoing. It just means that they're interested in talking to somebody. We don't know who it is yet. There's a lot of speculation, but it's a very vague early report, and it's kind of an example of how things are going to go here, and it's so different than the way it was under the Obama administration. Remember that when President Obama had all of his scandals, and he had endless scandals, Obama defenders always try to claim he had a scandal-free administration. That's laughable. He had one scandal after another, but every time he had one, his media friends immediately said, "It's old news. There's nothing to report here. There's no proof. You can't prove the president personally marched into the IRS office and insisted they target the Tea Party. So this is a non-story. It needs to go away immediately." Now we see the opposite. There's no evidence of wrongdoing, so we're going to dig harder. That means the story's getting hotter. It means the fiends in the Trump administration have hidden all the evidence, and we're going to find it.
Thank you, John.
The exact opposite mindset is being taken.
John, thank you so much for joining us on Washington Watch this afternoon. Very informative. Deeply appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me.
Coming up next, the new movie with Faith Keepers will be released next week. It gives a face to the voice and a voice to the humanitarian crisis, the genocide suffered by millions in the Middle East at the hands of ISIS and others. We'll be right back after a couple minutes.
It's happening everywhere, and not just in blue states. Radical LGBT activists are forcing potentially dangerous policies on schools, businesses, and other public places, violating the safety and privacy of women and threatening religious freedom. How can churches help protect their community and be a voice for the vulnerable on these issues? What can state legislators do to push back against local ordinances and federal efforts to allow men into girls' showers, restrooms, and locker rooms? What can parents and voters do? In a special one-hour program, FRC President Tony Perkins is joined by Texas Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest, and others, including experts and victims, to talk about what some states are doing to protect the safety and privacy of women and children and to defend the freedom to believe. Visit frc.org/privacy to view this event and many more.
This is Barry McGuire. I'm a car guy, and I love to lead people to Jesus Christ as a layman outside the walls of the church. Think of how many people you know and have influence over that don't know the Lord. I'm reminded of the famous Penn Jillette at Las Vegas Fave, who said, as a devout atheist, if you believe I'm going to hell, how much would you have to hate me to not tell me? I know you don't hate your unsaved friends. The question is, how much do you love them? More importantly, how much are you allowing God to love them through you? In every case, he's placed you in their lives for that very reason. It's not coincidental. Regardless of how nice or bad they are, how ungodly they may appear, God loves them as much as you, and he's placed them in your life to reach them. In fact, you might be the only Christian available to reach them. Your job is to ignite revival outside the walls of your church by moving everybody you're with today closer to Jesus. If you want to know how easy that is, go to ROTW.com.
Dan Celia of Financial Issues.
You know, there's probably never been a more important time in our economy to be thinking about a charitable gift annuity. I hope you'll do that just to shore up, to firm up some more income, permanent income, income that you can count on for the rest of your life while you're doing the Lord's work. A charitable gift annuity has been something I've been talking about for 25 years. Finally, we're seeing even mainstream start to get on board with the merits of charitable gift annuities. I hope you'll consider it. You can call the AFA Foundation. Someone there will help you work through the details and find out whether you qualify for a charitable gift annuity.
Call and speak with a representative of the AFA Foundation at 800-326-4543, extension 345.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Again, Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University in Bartlesville, Oklahoma, filling in for Tony this afternoon. If you want to call in later on in the show, it's 866-372-7234. That is 866-372-7234. If you want to follow Tony on Twitter, his Twitter handle is T Perkins. If you'd like to follow me, it's Dr. Everett Piper. That's DREVERETTPIPER. What we're going to shift over to right now is the story that I led into with a teaser at the tail end of the last segment, and that is this. In the Middle East, the birthplace of Christianity, as we all know, we are seeing untold persecution. It seems evident that Christians are being singled out to be driven from their homes, to be enslaved, to have their children stolen and taken into sex slavery and other evil things. And we see ultimate violence toward the church to the point that many are actually being killed, martyred for their faith. Places of worship are being destroyed. History is being erased before our very eyes. One of the greatest concerns I had with the Obama administration is it was essentially silent as the church suffered such great persecution at the hands of ISIS and others. Our own government was silent. Well, there's a powerful new documentary that's going to be released on May 23rd, and the name of that documentary is Faith Keepers, and it tells an upliftingly true story about these martyrs, these Christians, these brothers and sisters that are suffering for their faith simply because they refuse to announce it. The latest film, this film, Faith Keepers, is produced by the Clarion Project and Lightworks Media. And with us right now is Ron Morrow. He's the National Security Analyst for the Clarion Project. Ryan, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks so much for having me.
Ryan, forgive me for butchering your name there. I'm going to let you run with this. I want you to tell us about the movie, tell us what it is, tell us why you're supporting us and what we need to do to support it, to get it into our churches or to go watch it and get the numbers up in the local theater.
Sure. Well, if anyone out there has ever prayed for help for the persecuted Christians in the region or have ever said that they care about the issue, this is their time to step up. This is one of those moments where you have to look at yourself and say, do I really mean what I said? Because this film is just so powerful that people are leaving and it seems like their lives are changing. I mean, people are emailing me, they won't stop emailing me because they're so bothered by what they see because of the scale of this. And this is about the genocide of Christians in just one country, Iraq. You had the numbers of Christians go from somewhere between 1.1 million to 1.5 million Christians in 2003, all the way down to as little as 200,000 now. And that's happening in all of these Muslim countries in the Middle East, and it's happening to other minorities as
Ryan,
well.
I'm going to interrupt you because I want you to say those numbers again. I don't want those lost on the audience. What did you just say with regard to the numbers?
Sure. Well, in regards to Iraq specifically, numbers as high as 1.5 million 2003 are now down to as little as 200,000. That's one country. Some other numbers.
We've
Syria,
lost 1.3 million Christians in that country alone.
Yes, down to as little as 200,000 in Iraq alone, and our film covers Egypt, Syria, and these other countries in the region.
Staggering. And our government has been silent in the face of this. So you're bringing this message forward because our government wouldn't. So go ahead and tell us more.
Sure. And well, our internal research showed that originally I thought most Christians knew the scale of this, but it turns out most did not. And that's what our internal research showed, and that's why we decided to make this film. But it's a genocide not just about the Christians, but also about other minorities, including Jews, Yazidis, other Muslims, that's going on, and how this is a pattern of history that's been going on for a very long time. So when we say never again, well, it's been happening ever since, so over and over again. So we tell stories that have never been told before. You can see these people and as they talk to the camera and explain their stories, and it's just done in a very vivid manner. But it also comes with a call to action. So we have, in addition to this film, which you all need to have your church show, it'll take you 5 minutes to convince your church leadership to show it because there's no reason not to. But it, paired with this is the Faith Keepers Fund, where you can take a collection or make a donation yourself, and then we distribute it to a handful of vetted humanitarian organizations operating in the region that have little or no overhead, so it goes, boom, right to the people there, makes an immediate impact.
So how do the listeners get this movie into their church? What are the methods?
Well,
what do you have to do?
Sure. The easiest way, I would say, is just Google Faith Keepers or look it up on Facebook, and you can get all the information that you need there and just send the trailer over to your church leaders. And if they're not willing to show this, I would say you need to reconsider whether you should be at that church. I mean, there is no reason not to show this. It should be the number one issue. And there are many other ways to get involved. And what people have to understand is that it's so important just you making that email or phone call, because we can get email addresses and do these mass emails, but it usually goes into a spam folder, and we don't have that personal connection that you, the listener, have. And that's what we need to get the ball rolling. And so the premiere is the 23rd, but you can show it after, of course. And depending on the situation, we can sometimes get a speaker there or someone can attend by Skype. But at the very least, this is something that needs to be shown in your church.
Is it going to be shown in any theaters, or will it be solely shown in churches?
It's all sorts of houses of worship. I'm actually talking to Muslims about showing it. There are synagogues that are showing it. I'm not aware of any theaters that are showing it. I would assume there's going to be some people that might rent out a room in a theater. But this is meant to get it out as quickly as possible because time is of the essence. To give you an idea of the impact, though, when I was in Iraq earlier this year, I met a guy in one of the destroyed Christian areas who was in a great mood because he had earned $75 from a translating job, like a week ago. And that helped his family so much. And so if $75 can make that much of an impact on one family that's suffering so much in Iraq, just imagine what your $20 can do. What if you don't have that bacon cheeseburger, or you go to McDonald's instead of going to the fancy restaurant? Just what $1 can do is just amazing over there. So we all have to do something, and we should do something that hurts ourselves a little bit. Not just the spare dollar, something where we give up something.
Ryan, one more time, very quickly. How do they do this? Where do they go to get this movie in their church?
Just remember one word, Faith Keepers.
Google Faith Keepers. Thank you, Ryan, for being with us on Washington Watch. Very important message for us to hear.
Thank you.
Coming up next, we're going to talk about the story at Parkland High School, where administrators in Pennsylvania have blocked the formation of a pro-life club. And we'll talk to the senior student, Elizabeth Castro, after the break. We'll be right back in about 3 minutes.
Making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
Well, I guess there's some good news in oil and in the dollar. Of course, the dollar is rebounding right now. The dollar has been on a little bit of a slump, but the dollar getting a little bit stronger and rebounding as we see this period of weakness seem to subside a little bit. And primarily, the dollar strengthening is a result of some hawkish comments coming out of some of the Federal Reserve presidents, one being the Federal Reserve president from Cleveland, who has indicated that the Fed needs to keep raising rates this year, that the economic conditions continue to be strong, and as long as they continue on this pace, the Federal Reserve needs to continue to raise rates. Well, that gave the dollar a small boost anyway. Not to mention, we got a better than expected jobless claims and a manufacturing index number that was kind of off the charts good from the Fed in Philadelphia manufacturing region. So that was all good news, strong for the dollar. Also, oil prices seem to be settling in a little bit higher as we head into a new week of trading. Commodities in general still expected to face a little bit of a bumpy ride, that is for certain. But the important OPEC meeting in Vienna coming up here soon, OPEC is meeting to extend or at least to talk about extending production limits. All indications are, it certainly looks like they're going to do that. So on the heels of lower inventory numbers, this will be good news for oil, and maybe it'll just hover around this $50 range.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University, sitting in for Tony Perkins. Call-in number is 866-372-7234. I'll repeat that, 866-372-7234, and I will be taking calls in the last 15 minutes of the program after the next break, 866-372-7234. The principal and superintendent of Parkland High School in Allentown, Pennsylvania, recently received a demand letter from a senior student. Her name is Elizabeth Castro, and she represents the Students for Life of America. The letter was sent by the Thomas More Society representing Elizabeth and the Students for Life. The letter charges that the school's denial of the Students for Life, that group, to be permitted to function within the parameters of student clubs at that school, they're charging that this is unconstitutional and that it must be reversed. So with us right now is Elizabeth Castro herself. Elizabeth, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, thank you so much for having me here today.
Delighted to have you. Thanks for joining us. So I'm going to ask a question here, and then I want you to respond and tell us your story. As I understand it, on April 6th, you sent an email to the assistant principal where you tried to find out what could be done so that the Students for Life group could exist alongside other school clubs like the Gay Straight Alliance, the Chess Club, the Fashion Club, but you got no response from the school. Tell us about it, and what have you heard since?
Yeah, we sent our email trying to fix anything that was prohibiting us to become a club, and as you said, we got no response. It was kind of shocking that we wouldn't get a response, especially since, you know, I'm proud to be a Parkland High School student. You know, they're very proud of having all of their diverse clubs and activities. We think they'd be eager to have something like this on campus, since there is nothing like this on campus.
Have you received any response yet from the administration as a result of your request to have this club sanctioned?
No, nothing
Zero.
Yet.
Zero response.
Nothing.
So you haven't been denied per se, but you haven't even been acknowledged. Is that fair?
No, we have been denied. When we were denied when we first sent a proposal, but since we sent our demand letter, we have not heard anything from them.
Okay, so you have been denied. They will not sanction you. They will not allow you to function. However, at the same time, they have these other, as you've described them, diverse clubs such as the Gay Student Alliance and the various different clubs that represent fashion and whatnot. They're sanctioned by the school, but you guys aren't, and you can't even get a response.
Yeah, that is correct.
What do you think the next step is? What are you waiting for right now?
Right now, we're waiting for a response to our demand letter. And once we get that, we can see where we go from there. It all depends on the administration and how they decide to go.
Tell me what the purpose of your club is. What is it that you, what's your mission? What's your objective?
The mission of our club, our goal is to kind of create a pro-life atmosphere at my school and to kind of educate my peers on the beauty of life and also be a safe haven for pregnant teens in a crisis pregnancy, that they'll be able to be safe and feel safe at my school.
When you were denied, I assume that mission was clarified in your original proposal to the administration. They read that mission that you just described, and they denied you being sanctioned. Did they explain why?
They said our club was too political and too controversial.
So the definition of a human life, the definition of a baby being a human being as opposed to a biological mass, is political. It's not a principled moral issue in their mind, apparently.
Yes, apparently so.
Hey, one of the things that I'm encouraged by is the more I hear about your generation, I'm encouraged that you're waking up. Your generation is waking up to this pro-life argument, and you're recognizing that the radical abortion agenda, denying the very identity of a human being, is a lost argument. Do you agree? Is your generation coming to its senses on this issue?
That we, do you mind explaining the question a little bit further? Do you mean...
Is your generation becoming increasingly pro-life, as opposed to my generation, which drank the Kool-Aid on pro-choice?
Yeah, I do believe that my generation is, as you said, starting to wake up and kind of see what's actually happening out there, and that's all due to the fact of people trying to educate them on what happens during birth and or during the process and everything of developing, and of course all of the horrific abortion methods that are out there.
So what led you personally to become pro-life as opposed to an advocate of pro-choice and a pro-abortion?
Well, when I would say 2 years ago, my mom and I were having a conversation about pro-life. And she told me that when she was pregnant with my younger brother, she was pushed to have an abortion because she had health risks. She had bladder stones, and she decided to fight the hospital and tell them that they needed to ensure that her and her child would be safe. And she got what she wanted, and now I have a 14-year-old brother who also attends Parkland in high school.
Excellent, Elizabeth.
And my mother is safe and well.
Elizabeth, I'm so grateful for your leadership. Thank you for doing it. Thank you for having the courage to stand by your convictions. And I'm predicting something right now. You will succeed. Your club will be sanctioned. The Thomas More Society is a great advocate. Thank you for being on Washington Watch this afternoon.
Thank you so much for having me again.
Thank you, Elizabeth. All right, we're going to take a break right now. And when I come back, we're going to do some Q&A. So remember that the call-in number is 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234.
Your mission is to find Granny and get that sauce.
Affirmative.
1 million moms, in association with American Family Studios, introduces Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent.
I'm Ryan DeFrady's. I work alone.
Ryan is arrogant and reckless until the day he's paired with a very unlikely partner.
No way! I can do this alone, without anyone's help, much less my mom's.
Look, Ryan.
She's my mom!
Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent is the new action-adventure series featuring a young spy with a whole lot to learn.
Mama's coming!
coming, sweetie.
She's an agent. Get her, boys.
Each exciting, fun-filled episode teaches children important values, like honoring parents and respecting authority. And there's a brief wrap-up at the end that connects the story to a biblical illustration. Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent. Perfect for children ages 6 and over. Order yours today at ryansecretagent.com.
Physicians keep learning after medical school in order to better save lives. Shouldn't Christian leaders keep learning to better save souls? Hi, I'm Dr. John Nyhoff, president of Wesley Biblical Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi, and online around the world. Are you a Christian leader who thinks it's important to keep learning? WBS online weekend and evening classes allow graduate students to become better equipped to make disciples in a constantly changing world. For more information, visit wbs.edu.
There's a lot happening around us. That's why Christians need to stand strong on family values and morality. Hi, I'm Ray Rooney, editor of The Stand, a blog from the American Family Association. The Stand has timely, carefully written articles on relevant cultural issues that you can quickly forward to others. The Stand is a beacon of light to a society in need of direction. Visit afa.net/the stand.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. Sanctuary cities and states are safe havens for criminals. They're cities and states that aid and abet illegal aliens to quote-unquote legally break the law. These communities themselves become lawbreakers. People committing criminal acts are often not prosecuted. It's truly unthinkable. Do you realize that? Sanctuary cities? These communities embrace illegals. They are Trojan horses set for our destruction and breeding grounds for terrorist training. Many of these illegals have committed other crimes like theft, rape, assault, and subversion. Why are we protecting those who flagrantly disregard the law while our courts are attacking our own citizens for standing on a principled conscience like bakers, florists, and photographers? This is a Decency Minute. Find us at americandecency.org. I'm Bill Johnson.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Dr. Everett Piper here, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University in Bartlesville, Oklahoma. As I've said earlier on the program, Oklahoma Wesleyan is a Christian institution, conservative and proud of it. We stand for the primacy of Jesus Christ, the priority of Scripture, the pursuit of truth, and the practice of wisdom, the four pillars of our mission statement. And you know, within that mission statement, the pursuit of truth and the practice of wisdom, obviously we believe that truth exists, and we believe that there's something that defines the human being other than your opinion or political power or what's popular. You know, I've said before on the program several times ago, maybe even when I was a guest rather than a guest host, that I used to be pro-choice. I actually drank the Kool-Aid back in the day. And I bought the argument that you can't legislate morality, that you can have a Republican candidate that you can support or a Democratic candidate that you can support that says, I don't believe in abortion, but I just don't believe in legislating morality. One day I woke up and I realized that that argument is just frankly silly and vacuous. It makes no sense. All legislation, whether it be a speeding limit or whether it be a law against murder, assumes a moral foundation and a moral standard. All legislation is the legislation of morality. Otherwise, it would have no heart or soul or even reason for existing. There are moral assumptions that are laden and foundational to every legislative act. So this argument that you can't legislate morality just makes no sense. And that woke me up to the vacuous nature of the pro-choice argument. Because really what it is, it's arguing for moral nihilism and moral neutrality when it comes to terminating another human being. And of course, morality should come into play when one human being's life is being sacrificed for the choice or the comfort of another. I swung to the pro-life side of the debate very aggressively and have been there ever since. And here is the key reason, not the logic of not legislating morality, however, that led me down that path. The key reason is God defines life. You don't, and neither do I. God is the definer of what is living and what is dead, not the human being, not the politician, not the pundit, not the preacher, not the professor. God defines life. I don't. And if we can't get that basic principle right, then all is lost, because we will become subject to power, and the powerful will oppress those with less power. And who has the least amount of power among us? The youngest among us. Those that don't have a voice yet should be defended by those who do. Powerful people should always come to the defense of the powerless. Isn't that what our democracy is all about? Isn't that what a free republic is supposed to stand for? Isn't that what the social justice warriors are calling upon us to do? Is to defend the powerless. Well, I believe we can win this argument, and Elizabeth Castro in Allentown, Pennsylvania, is doing the right thing. I've got a couple callers. I don't know if it's this issue you want to talk about. We can go after some other things if that's your preference. Sydney in Texas, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, thank you so much, Dr. Piper. I really appreciate everything you do, and your school sounds fantastic. I hope that I have a chance of attending one day.
Thank you. I'm getting some echo here, so I don't know if you're on speakerphone or what, but try to correct that if you could.
My apologies. How about now? Is it better?
That's better. Thank you.
All right. So, yes, sir. So, I'm 27, and I work at a hospital. And my coworker, who is a nurse, or my bad, she's kind of like what helps a nurse, OBN. So, she was telling me about the Chelsea Manning incident and how this guy has the right to change himself and how he should be recognized as a woman. And I just wanted to know, and from your words, because I love the way you state this argument, why would a woman, you know, support somebody who's really trying to steal their identity and along those lines? And I'm just confused on how that whole thing plays out, regardless of whatever sort of prosecution he used to fall under. I just wanted to know, what point of view would you take on being able to say some loving, correcting words to someone who may be confused in that matter? Thank you, sir.
Okay, thank you, Sydney. Probably be a little bit of a repeat for you all, but so be it. Chuck Colson once told us, when I was studying under him, which was a real privilege, that the best way to learn something is to keep repeating it over and over and over and over again as you try to teach it. So repetition is a good thing. It's also said that Ronald Reagan had one speech in his entire career. Did you know that? His speechwriter said he had one speech from the time he was governor to the time he retired as the president of the United States. They called it the speech. Now, obviously, Reagan communicated differently every time he took the podium, but he always stayed on message, was the point. He kept repeating things over and over again. It was once said of a successful college president that retired, when he was asked, what was the secret to your success? And he said three things: repetition, repetition, repetition. So I'm going to repeat myself in answering you, Sydney. Why in the world would anybody be so pretentious as to claim to be pro-woman but deny that women exist? How in the world can you be a feminist and deny the feminine? In other words, women are real. I believe in biology. I believe in physiology. I believe in science. I'm not a science denier. So when the left or the progressives come to me and say, well, as a conservative evangelical Christian, you don't believe in science, you just believe in those fantasies of God, those fabrications of faith, that is your drug to just help you get through life, the pain of life, if you will, the opiate of the masses. My answer is, well, in fact, I do believe in science. When I drive through a neighborhood, I believe that logic and statistics would indicate that somebody, probably a builder and an architect, probably designed those homes and those houses and those streets and those curbs and those gutters. I believe there's a designer behind that design. When I read a book, I believe there's an author behind those pages. When I see a painting, I think there is a person holding a brush that was actually applying the paint. In other words, I use logic to try to interpret the things around me, and I don't apologize for that. In fact, I would argue that makes me more pro-science rather than less. So one of the first things, Sydney, I think we need to do is put this silly fallacy to rest that somehow conservatives are anti-science. No, we're not. In fact, when it comes to the sexuality debate, we're the most pro-science people in the room, because it is those that want to deny biology, deny physiology, deny genetics, who are claiming that women aren't real, that they're nothing but a fabrication They're nothing but a fantasy. They're nothing but make-believe. They're like leprechauns and unicorns. They don't really exist, because any time a delusional or dysphoric male raises his hand on a given day and says, I'm a woman, that makes it so. Now, how insulting is it to the biological female to be told by these arrogant elitists that she doesn't even exist? She doesn't have her own rights because she's not real. She doesn't have her own bathroom. She doesn't have her own shower. Doesn't have the right to her own sports teams or her own facilities. And in fact, Title IX, the 1972 law that obligates colleges like me to give women equal access to the athletic field, is null and void. It's meaningless right now, because how can I give a woman equal access to any athletic field if Title IX and the federal government, the DOE and the OCR, is telling me that I have to deny the fact of the female? Do you understand what I'm saying? This is nonsense. It's lunacy. It makes no sense to claim to be pro-woman and then turn around and insult her and say, you don't even exist. You don't have the right to your bathroom. You don't have your right to your shower. You can't have the right to your own sport, because men that want to displace you can do so just by pretending on that given day that they're something they're not. It's the denial of fact. It's delusional. It's dysphoric. It makes no sense. And the conservative can call people out on the lack of logic and the lack of compassion and the lack of consistency and the fact that they're misogynists when they deny that women have the right to their dignity, their identity, their privacy, and their facilities. I think I've got one more caller. I lost your name here, but Hugh from Missouri. Excuse me there. Hugh from Missouri. Welcome to Washington Watch.
Yeah, hi. My comment is that we don't hear nearly enough about the physical and mental health problems associated with abortion. I think the incidence of breast cancer is much higher, and I think the incidence of suicide is much higher. Women have had abortions, and they should know that when they're considering it.
Well, Hugh, I agree with you. Just a second. What I would argue is that your question is the absolute right question when we're talking about a lot of the sexual politics issues of our day. Because what is the only way that you can actually cure sexually transmitted diseases? Don't have unbiblical sex. If you confine your lifestyle to biblically defined sexual activity, sexually transmitted diseases would go away. How can we avoid the negative consequences of abortion? Honor the fact that God defines life and we don't. And therefore the negative consequences, whether it be psychological or physiological, will be mitigated. They'll go away. Not to mention the fact that the person we were killing before is now going to enjoy life that he wouldn't or she wouldn't have otherwise, because we were killing them. So the fact of the matter is that the biblical worldview is always propped up by science, by facts, by statistics. Do you know that 25% of the female population of the millennial generation is now carrying an STD? Now, again, I ask you, how is that a good thing, to be advocating a lifestyle and practices and activities and behaviors that we know will result in 25% of the women 18 to 35 years of age contracting an STD? That is not healthy. That's not right. You could be a secularist. You don't have to be a Christian or a conservative to agree that statistically this is not right. And we know this is true, because if another product failed at that rate, let's say the Corvair, for example, was failing at a 25% rate and causing asphyxiation of those that were driving it, the Ralph Naders of the world would be screaming bloody murder, and rightfully so. So we can use the exact same questions and logic as we confront these other things that result in harm to the human being. Because surely the left, surely the progressives believe in justice, don't they? Well, doesn't justice include health for all those that we rub elbows with and all those disenfranchised around us? Wouldn't we want the healthiest lifestyle for them? I would hope so. Hugh, your question is spot on. Todd, I believe, I don't know where you're from, but Todd, welcome to Washington Watch. Hey, do I still have Todd?
Thanks for taking my call.
Todd, where are you from? I lost it in the transition here.
I'm from Louisiana.
Okay, welcome. What can I do for you?
Yeah, thank you for taking my call, by the way. I'm a pro-lifer, as you are, And, you know, we have a lot of, I don't know, mistaken identity of what's going on with the abortion issue. And to me, my opinion is this. The baby in the womb doesn't really know what happened outside the womb. You know, so why, you know, why would you kill that child? That child does not know, you know, what happened. And I think he has a chance to, you know, to live. And my other statement is that if you come into that problem, why don't you have the child adopted? That way the child has a, you know, we want to protect life as much as we can. And I want to say one more thing before I leave. I'm going to leave right now. I think the liberals are scared of Judge Gorsuch because he's going to overturn Roe v. Wade. I'm going to get your opinion on that, brother. Thank you.
Well, we don't know yet on Judge Gorsuch. I was debating with somebody the other day who was an anti-Trumper, and I basically called him out. And I was always cautious on Trump, and I wasn't a never-Trumper because I thought when you say never, you need to mean it, and you need to stick with it. But during the primaries, I was critical of the now president, and I think for good cause. But during the primaries, I went silent because I believe that I had a choice to make. And one choice was for a person who, as a woman was saying that she would double down on abortion and that she would pursue the ongoing murder of millions and millions of the defenseless in our culture, Hillary Clinton. And I cannot support that. I had another candidate who said he didn't believe in abortion anymore. He used to, but he didn't now. Well, I used to advocate for pro-choice, but I don't now. So I kind of felt obligated to listen to President Trump and try to believe him. And so far, I've been pleased. President Trump has done what he said he'd do when it comes to the pro-life issue. He has appointed a judge that we believe will vote for the dignity of the human being and the rights of the least among us. We believe that he will support the definition of human life as an objective reality and not some sort of governmental construct or postmodern construct of the human being. We believe that Judge Gorsuch will do that. Now, I was debating with somebody the other day, and he said, well, you don't know that. And I said, well, you don't know that he won't, so give it a rest. Stop assuming the negative on Judge Gorsuch until you've got a reason to believe it. And if that's the case, then call balls and call strikes as the case may be as an objective umpire. But until then, get off of the kick of being so anti-Trump that you can't even celebrate what could potentially be a very positive choice in the Supreme Court. You know, when it comes to the pro-life, pro-choice debate, I really think it boils down to this. It boils down to this. Do you believe that the unborn child is a human being or don't you? Now, science, again, would tell us that individual, that thing in the womb, if you will, is indeed a human being because we know through ultrasound technology and whatnot that it is. It's not your appendix. It's not your tonsils. It's not just some biological mass. This is a living, moving, breathing human being that has function. And here is the key question. What difference does location make in defining what's human and what's not? So if you believe in abortion in the first trimester, the second trimester, and the third trimester, but then you say you don't believe in terminating the baby after it's born. Well, really nothing has changed in the last phase of the third trimester other than location. It moved from point A to point B. So did location change the identity? Obviously not. Ask the right questions, folks, and remember to fight the good fight for Christ and his kingdom because we know who wins. This has been Dr. Everett Piper sitting in with Tony Perkins on Washington Watch. Have a great weekend.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.